DMT World presents The Rambling Rabbit, and I am its host, Happy KB. Welcome to The Rambling Rabbit. It's me, Happy KB, the host. So today we have a special guest, and with us is Maddie580. He's been with us in the community since about September of 2024. So sit back, have a session, and I hope you enjoy the conversation between me and Maddie580.
It's one of those things, you know, and I mean, like, there was a lot of blame, you know, I think with my parents growing up, you know, and it's just my last time through rehab, like, everything dawned on me. Sure. You know, I had it on my Facebook thing, you know, on my whole intro, it was like, you know, finally found healing through a freaking tie-dyed tapestry. One of our, one of the BPKs that was in there, totally super cool guy. So he had gotten approval years before. He was like totally into the whole tie-dye thing. And he's like, so I'm going to have to use ice instead. So he sprinkles everything in, and he, you know, a couple days later, he brings it back to us. And, you know, he opens it up and this thing, I mean, it's just the most incredible thing that I've ever seen. And that's what's on my profile on DMT World.
That makes sense. I wondered what that was.
That is the center of it. That's the eye that was created by what his start was. And so all the other, you can see how everything, and everybody saw something different in it. When you see the whole thing, and I'll shoot you a picture of it then. People are like, oh, I see a bat, I see a turtle. And I mean, it's in how the black. And he said, man, I've done these for years. And he goes, I've never seen one do this the way it's done. And so what he does with them is it goes up on display in the rehab, and then it hangs there until the very last person that had anything to do with its creation goes home. And then he puts them up for auction. And then the proceeds buys more dye, more muslin cloth to keep the whole thing running. And of course, everybody's in there and they're like, oh man, I'm going to take that sucker home. And I walked up to him and I just said, I'm taking that home. I said, how do you? And so they're not technically allowed to have contact with us. So he goes, here's my business Facebook page. He goes, technically, by rules, I'm not having personal contact with you. It's my business.
Right.
This was
when you went to a rehab, right? And this was what they utilized. Yeah. This was a therapy type thing that they did for you. Is that correct? Is that what you're?
Yeah.
And,
yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I wanted to make sure to get that because when I started recording this, I want to make sure people know that that's what this is when they see your profile picture, because I think that's important. I think like this is very therapeutic, tie-dye and doing something like this and creating. I think it's amazing. So keep going. Tell me a little bit more about it.
So there was another BHA in there, a young lady. And so she came in before we left and basically said that she was taking on a new job.
What's a BHA lady?
So like, BHA basically stands for a behavioral health advocate.
Okay.
It's a really snazzy term for people that have two years. So the qualifications at the rehab were you had to have at least 2 years clean. And that way, if you wanted to come back and become a counselor, or not a counselor, basically the BHAs were what we dealt with all day long. They're the ones that basically gave us like our little lesson plans. They were like our chaperones. And they're just addicts like everybody else. It's just they've had some time under their belt, you know, with sobriety. And so she said, and basically, you know, I told these guys, I said, guys that I was in there with, I said, it's a labor of love. I mean, these people were only getting paid like $12.50 an hour.
Right.
And I'm like, bro, that's like after taxes. I'm like, you're lucky if you're making $300 a week. Mm-hmm. I'm like, and these guys full time, I'm like, they're barely meeting their bills just to be here and interact with us. You know, I'm like, so don't tell me it's about money. And, you know, because there was a lot of, you know, there's always the opinionated ones. Oh, they don't give a crap about us. I'm like, apparently they do, because let me tell you what, for $12.50 an hour, I wouldn't be here.
Right. Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm like, at my age, I'm like, I'm not even getting my rear end out of bed on a Saturday if it's anything less than $30 an hour. I'm sorry. You know, it was. And so anyway, so when I got out, I saw her on Facebook. So I shot her a friend request.
Right.
And she accepted. And she's like, OK, I'm not affiliated with them anymore. So there's no repercussions for me. Well, it's like a month later, and all of a sudden I get a message from her, and she's like, hey, she said, Troy's reaching out to me to get a hold of you. Tomorrow's going to be the auction, and he wants to know if you want to try to sneak, if you want to bid on this. And
oh,
I'm like,
oh, and your thing
on
here.
The tie-dye. Oh, yes. Okay. On the tie-dye tapestry. And I'm gotcha. Like, I'm like, oh my God. And I had asked him before we left, I said, so what are these? He goes, $100, $150. He's like, that's about it. And yeah. He goes, that's about the top of the line the bidding will go. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And so I get out. Well, I'm just getting resituated with getting back to work. I basically, when I came out this last time, I did what I should have done all the other times. And I said, I'm taking a month or so just for me.
Right.
You know, to just get my head back where it needs to be. And so I just started working, and I'm like, oh my God. So I called my boss and I said, can you loan me $200? And I explained why. And he goes, I'll tell you what. He goes, so you're telling me they usually bottom out at about $150. And I said, yeah. He goes, all right, let's make a statement. He was like, I'm going to give you the $200. You don't have to pay me back. And he's like, and I'm going to donate $200 as well on top of it. Because he's like, I think what they're doing is an awesome thing. And he was like,
absolutely.
So I basically reached out to him on his Facebook page and said, on his business page, and said, hey, how about this? How about you just skip the time tomorrow of wasting the time of getting this auction started? Because I'm prepared to give you $400 in cash right now.
Mm.
And he was just like, oh my God, are you freaking serious? And I said, yeah. I'm totally serious. And he was like, I'll see you here at the rehab tomorrow morning. And so I drove out there and gave him, and he said, you don't understand. He goes, this will buy all the supplies. He's like, this will feed this whole trauma tapestry class I do. He goes, this will feed it for the next year.
Oh my, that's good. Wow.
And you know, and so I brought it home, and of course, like, my boss looks at it and he's like, I'm not even going to try to understand the importance. He goes, but I knew, he goes, I know you. And he was like, and I know it was important to you. And he's like, that's all I need to understand.
Right. Yeah. For sure.
So I usually crash in my living room. I just like it because it's got tons of windows. And especially in the spring and summer, like, I have all the hopper windows cranked open and the air just blows through there. And so they're all blind. I have Venetian blinds on all of them. So I have it hanging in there. And in the spring and summer, when the sun's on that side of my house, it just looks amazing in the morning when the sunlight comes through it. And it's like the first thing I see. And it reminds me. And that's what I'm saying, you know, do I dwell in shame on my past anymore? No. Do I regret it? Absolutely.
So here's my question. To catch people up, you've gone to rehab a couple times.
Four times.
Right?
Four times.
How many? Four times.
Yeah.
And so this last time when everything kind of clicked, that's when you experienced with the tie-dye. So what about the times before? Do you want to talk about those?
Sure. So when I went, first time I went, I was just shy of 28. So a little bit of my history here. So, you know, I'm a 16-year-old high school dropout.
Tell me all about it. Tell me all about it.
Yeah. I'm a 16-year-old high school dropout. So I was just absolutely rebellious, out of control. You know, the number one thing of importance in my life at that point was just getting high. Disobeying any and all authority. And So my sophomore year, at that time we had, I think we had 180 days was our typical school year. I had already racked up 98 days of out of school suspension, which was over half the school year. And they basically went to my mom and said, he's going to get expelled at the end of this year. The board will sit down. They're going to look at his, how he's been, he's going to get expelled. And so my guidance counselor was like, honestly, if it was me, I'd sign him out now, because then the expulsion's not on his record if he decides like he wants to go back to another school.
Oh, okay.
Like, it's going to be easier to get in. So I was 3 weeks shy of my 17th birthday, which in that time in Pennsylvania was how old you had to be to sign yourself out of school.
Wow.
So my mom actually had me.
That kind of dates us, because I remember those days.
Yeah. And, you know, so my mom had to come in and do it. And, you know, my parents, you know, or the divorce had just basically the divorce had kind of had gone through. And my father came down, he found out, oh my God, he was freaking out and basically threatened my mom. Like he was going to take all this stuff away. And basically she handled it very well. And her attorney basically called him and said, bro, you've already signed the papers. There's not a daggone thing you can do. She has 100% custody. It's his choice, her choice, and you can't do anything about it. And guess what? Yes, you will keep paying child support and you will keep doing this and that. And that's just how it is. What made him so upset was is that even though I was such the delinquent, on paper, I'm supposed to have an extremely high IQ.
I was going to say, you definitely are gifted material. I can tell that just by some of the conversations we've had. Yeah. So that's dad was upset because we were not going to further our education.
He was just, yeah, he was like, I mean, he was like, the sky could be the, you know, he was like, sky's the limit. He was like, you could be a doctor, a lawyer. And right. I'm like, I don't want to be any of those things.
Right.
I mean, you know, success for him at that
was
success
also
for him at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
The program response, because your parents are about the same age as my parents. And so like that's the thing that was that's what we were supposed to do. That's what we were been told from the get-go to do.
Absolutely. And you know, his success at that time was all based on dollar amounts. And
yes.
To him, success was about how much money you accumulated by the time your time was up on this planet. That right. is how your level of success was judged. And he has found out very hard that that is not even close to the case. You know, that's not how I judge success at all. You know, I mean, money's fleeting. And most people that I know that have a ton of it, because I have in the past, it changes them. I don't care what anybody says. It really does. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a real easy time of forgetting where they have come from,
yes.
and what they started out as.
Yep.
I don't ever want to forget that. It's because that's, my boss's sister asked me this one time. She said, do you ever wonder who you would be if you had made all the right decisions? I said, no, absolutely not. I said, I have no inkling to even want to know who that person would be, because I said, it wouldn't be who's here now.
Oh, absolutely.
Those mistakes and all the horrible blunders that I've made are what forged me into the human that I am now. Which is, you know, I mean, I'm always told, and I mean, sometimes when you, it's weird when you have people come up and they tell you the qualities that they see in you, you know, it's just like, oh crap. Okay. Because they it's like really, you don't see them yourself.
Right.
And I mean, you know, the level of compassion, I mean, like, because I've been there. I mean, I know what it's like to be at the very bottom. And, you know, it's just, and I was raised that way too. You know, I'm a really emotional guy. Like I have no problems crying. I mean, like, and I don't give a crap if there's 80 other guys in the room, you know what? think of me, well, you know, I really don't, I don't care what anybody's opinions are, you know, and honestly, most of the time I'm like, I'm probably more man than you are because you want to cry. You just don't have the cojones to do it. You know, yes. I'm like, I'm just, because that was another thing, like, you know, and my father and I talked about that, like growing up in his era, and like probably the same with your father, like you didn't, men didn't show their, didn't cry. They didn't show emotion like that.
Yes. My dad still kind of doesn't show a lot of that emotion. I really have to kind of pull things. I have to really ask him questions because he doesn't give up free information much. And emotion right. is, yeah. My dad's can be my dad is a retired United Methodist pastor. And so
okay.
The compassion is there and the internal emotion. But yeah, you know, he's a Vietnam vet, and, you know, he raised two kids and his wife on very little and really worked his way through it. And yeah, you just, sometimes you have to learn to sever that emotion to just keep going. And they gone through war. My granddad went to World War II. And so they learned too, you know, from him, you don't cry. You don't show your vulnerability. You are a man. You stay, you know, and you stay strong. And misconceptions that, with when we keep teaching that, but we don't teach people how to be emotional and that it is okay to be emotional, that's when we start seeing some of the breakdown that we see have been seen in our last decade or so, because people are not in touch with what's going on internally with themselves.
Oh no. And you know, when they finally realize there is something that's going on in there, because they've never had an emotional click with, you know, their inner self, it's they don't even begin to know how to deal with those emotions,
right? And sometimes I think that's where the not being able to deal with the mental part that comes along with emotions sometimes spirals people into directions that they don't know how to handle, and sometimes that's what flips them over the edge or flips them out, because we didn't teach them how to do that.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, I've seen it completely frazzle people. I mean, it literally mentally broke them, and like they were never quite the same after that. But on the other hand, I've met people that are way, way, way too over emotional. And it's funny you say that about, you know, the changes and stuff we've seen over the past couple of decades. I mean, here in the past, couple of years, I mean, it's just all of a sudden that, you know, one of the big topics you'll hear on other social platforms is like, you know, about men and you know, that, you know, nobody really knows what men go through being men and it's, you know, and I'm like, well, part of that is because of how it's this ideology. I'm like, that you're this stoic thing of marble, like self, like sustaining system here. And I'm like, you know, I saw a guy on an interview. He's like this, I forget what his name is, crazy old like Texas guy. You know, he's got like this huge ZZ Top beard. And the interviewer was there, and he said, man, he's like simple. Sis, he goes, men, they don't need therapy. He goes, really? He goes, I'm telling you, he goes, all they need is just a simple acknowledgement for all the shit they go through on a daily basis. Just, to, you know, he goes, that's it. He was like, I'm telling you, he was like, men would hear, they start hearing this. He goes, they're not going to need to go see therapy. And, you know, and I mean, and I understand that. But on the other hand, mothers go through that same thing too. I mean, you know, I'm like, this, it's not a man thing. It's like a life thing. I mean, you've got single mothers that, I mean, they've got to go to work to put food on the table, and then they've got to come home and they've got to have this stoic face on in front of their children, like that everything's okay. And, you know, when on the inside, they're just getting ripped to pieces.
Yes.
And true. I mean, I've seen my mom go through it. And I mean, when my father first left the first time,
I
was probably three, and
okay,
I was about three.
Okay,
and I can remember like, I know now, and I remember it more now than I did then. But I mean, my maternal grandmother, who was just, I mean, she was the, if there was a poster board, all kids, I perfect grandmother would be, that's how my grandmother would be. I mean, she was just the most incredible lady. She loved her grandkids. Like, she knew I was coming. There was always my favorite treat in the cupboard. There was my favorite. I mean, she just, nice. And you know, it, and that's where, and so, you know,
What's her name? Maddie, what's her name?
So her name is Judy.
That's my mom. That's my mom's name, Judy. That's awesome.
Okay, so my mother's name is Susan. My grandma's name was Judy. And like I said, she divorced my mom's father. And I mean, there was where I live in York. There's a little town right about 15 minutes away from us. It's called Windsor. Was a little, and part of this area of Pennsylvania is, tobacco was a big thing here. You know, tobacco was a big industry at one point back in the day, and there's still a lot of farmers right on the Susquehanna River that's here. That basically it flows from like up in New York to, and then it flows down into, you know, into the Chesapeake Bay. And so it's, tobacco is still a big industry. You know, there's still a lot of tobacco farms, and, there was a little old cigar factory. It was called the House of Windsor, and my grandfather basically bought it and like brought this thing out of the ashes of like ruin, and turned it into like a multi-million-dollar company. And my father was in Vietnam as well. And he said, Matt, he was like, the big thing for them was like, they get to have leave and they would go into Hong Kong at the time. You know, which was at that time was still governed. It was a British province and was still governed by British law. But, you know, he was like, there was House of Windsor cigars and shops over there. You know, so my grandmother, when they divorced, walked away with some money, and she bought a farm in another little town real close to us called Hellam. It's a farm town. It's pretty much, you know, it's one of
Hellam,
those towns where everybody knows. It's what's that?
Did you say Hellam? You say Hellam? The name of the town? Okay.
Yes. And so I can.
I know nothing about Pennsylvania. When you start putting words out, I'm like, okay, I'm going to write these down so I can see where these are at. So,
yeah. So it's funny. I'll remember. So Route 30, which is what's also known as the Lincoln Highway. It basically goes from the East Coast to the West Coast.
Okay.
So, you know, we would get on that to go to my grandmother's place. And when we get on the road was A.M. And I never took any thought into it, but I mean it eventually went before, like, just within the last 15 years they took it before the town board and all this crap they went through to have it changed to an A instead of the E, because they didn't like how, you know, the beginning part of the town's name was Hell and how it portrayed them. And I'm like, which taxpayer money? I'm like, what portrays you?
Right.
You know, I'm like, for real, it's not the name of the town, it's the people in it. That's what portrays, that's what people see in a town. You know, I mean, you had said to me, I mean, you're familiar with Chicago. And I don't, I've never been there, but I
never,
spent 10
you've
years,
never been there?
Nope.
We should change that. We can change that.
But I spent a decade in New York City.
That's cool.
You know, so when you get down into like the little shitty parts, like people don't understand, like, you know, they think of Manhattan, it's like they think it's this, Manhattan's just, most of Manhattan is just as bad as the Bronx or the slums in Queens.
Yeah.
I mean, here's all five boroughs have amazingly beautiful places that are in them. I mean, like the Bronx Zoo is just absolutely incredible. You know, the Metropolitan Museum of Art in Manhattan,
yes,
is absolutely incredible. You know, and that was by chance. But you know, though, you would find welcoming people, like in these little corner bodegas and stuff. But man, when you go to all these, like, and I've been to them, these big 4 and 5 star restaurants, like that you see online, I mean, they're the most standoffish pricks that you have ever met in your life. Yep. And I'm just like, really? I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, oh yeah, the food was amazing, but the experience totally sucked. You know? And I'm just like, you know, I'm like, no, man. I'm like, and that's, you know, that's one of the things I've learned in life is, you know, and that's, you say that, you know, I always try to just be open and friendly with people because, man, that's how beautiful relationships are started. And, you know, being some, like, I swear, like, when I was a kid, like, I look back at my grandpa, like, my dad's dad now, and well, even more so was my mom's father. Oh, my gosh. He was my Papaw Richard, and, you know, his name was Dick Smith, and so we called him Papaw. Yeah. And I'm like, I swear to God, I'm not going to grow up to be like how they are. And my mom asked me one time, I said, they walk around with a stick shoved up their ass. And I mean, I was like 13 or 12. And she's like, oh my God. And I'm like, well, they do. I'm like, you know, I'm like, they're just these like stern things. And like, I can remember, like, you know, you'd get there and, you know, and for Christmas, and it was like a pat on the head, like, hey, how the hell are you? You know, give you a little chuck on the shoulder, and I'm like, and that's how it was. I mean, I'm just like, wow, I'm not going to be that guy. Right. You know, and I mean, this was funny. This was just like 10 years ago. I was at an event, and I'm standing there, and I felt something tugging on my shirt, and it was this young kid, young boy, and he was like, mister. And he kept saying mister, and I'm looking at him, and all of a sudden I was like, holy shit, he's talking to me. Like, oh my, I'm like, yeah, buddy, what do you need? And he was like, he was trying to get to his mom and dad, and he couldn't get through the crowd of people. And so I'm like, come on. So, you know, I got him over to where his mom and dad were. And, but I was like, holy crap. I came home, and I'm like, so I'm telling my boss this, and he looks at me, he goes, damn. He's like, it took you that long to figure that out, you know? And I was like, yeah, dude. He was like, you're 42 years old. You're an adult.
Right.
But you know, like I look at like my group of friends and how we act at 52, and you know, I'll be 53 in June. And I'm like, you know, like I have some other friends, like, and they're, I look at them and I'm like, oh dude, you so want to act like we do, but you've got to be like the proper husband and father. And I'm like, bro, I'm like, you could still be all that. And still, it's like, you don't have to, it's weird. I mean, you've probably seen it. Like all of a sudden it's like, they become like uber responsible, but it's like, they visualize, like you see that in them.
Right. They forget that they were at one point in time an age where they did the things, and they think that they have to change because now they have this other responsibilities, and they're afraid how people are going to look at them. And totally changes the psyche process. And then they become, I won't say uncool, but like they become a square. That happens a lot.
That is absolutely beautiful. You know, square, and that they do. You know, it's funny because I used to say that to people, like that, like guys I work with, they would start really irritating me. And like, especially my boss's two kids, like they were so, like my boss is a really devout born again Christian guy. And I mean, he's great. I mean, he's not a Bible thumping guy. But you know, he really was strict with his kids. And I mean, and I babysat them. I've seen them from the time right after they were born. I've changed their diapers. And I mean, I'm like, I looked at him, my boss, one day, and I'm like, dude, not to make your head swell any bigger than it is. Mm-hmm. I'm like, but I was like, bro, you did an awesome job. And he's like, man, he was like, you have no idea how much time you have to be willing to just give up to get this. And he was like, and trust me, he's like, there's no guarantee that it's going to end it this way. He was like, they're still their own person. He was like, you just do the best you can to instill in them. And they were homeschooled for the longest time.
The key is to not lie to them. The key is to be honest and still be yourself with your children. Because that's how they learn. That's how they learn to be that way too. That's one thing. My kids, I'm very lucky. My kids have turned out very well as well, but that's just it. Being a single mom, like I didn't have that other person there to like, you know, sometimes parents get very, the children, the parents are the parents, and they keep that separate. Well, I didn't have that option. My kids just knew everything that was happening, but I was never lied to them. But I was strict with them growing up because I understood how the world was changing. I knew that there were these ideologies that were at play, as they're going to go to school, you know, their community, it was evolving just like the bigger community, the adult community. And so I knew that there was going to be some trickle down, and I had to make sure that I stuck to my guns because I could have easily just lost control of my kids and they could have turned out to be like complete total assholes and just ungrateful and all those things. And they didn't, they weren't. They're very kind children. They're very thought provoking. They're very, they're intelligent. They think for themselves, because of how I raise them. I look at my brother and his family, completely different, but we came from the same household, but
yeah,
I get it. I totally get it.
Change and diapers. And you're right. I mean, like when I was a kid, I mean, things are way different now. Yes. And you just, you know how things have changed. I mean, like when I went to school, I mean, we walked, I mean, it was probably, it was almost 3/4 of a mile to my bus stop. It was up a couple streets and then, you know, it was behind it. What it used to be our elementary school. But you know, that's where I caught the bus, you know, to go to like middle school and stuff. I mean, and the elementary school's right there as well. I mean, when I was a kid, we walked to school. I mean, it's like you can't have that anymore.
Nope.
You know, I mean, there was, you know, our bus had 2 stops and like you walked the rest of the way. I'm like, now a bus stops like in front of every single house.
Yes.
And I'm like, look, we all as adults know, I mean, there's nothing more here. And I am becoming my grandfather in some aspects. Like when I'm behind the wheel of a car and I'm like, oh my God, I'm like, do you not understand? Okay, here's the deal. Why doesn't one parent a week just takes the responsibility? All the kids are in that front yard. You know, I'm like, the bus can make 1 stop on the street. You know, I'm like, this is not rocket science. Right. And I'm like, look, you put, you know, one child alone, yes, is very vulnerable. Put 19 of them all together. Let me tell you what, they're not quite as vulnerable, right. You know. So, and I'm like, for God's sakes, I mean, it's weird. Like when I can remember after I quit school, I actually went back like a couple times. Like my shop teacher, my wood shop teacher, he was the most amazing guy. He was an ex-drill sergeant from the Marines. Oh. But his name was Terry Schenberger. But he was just, he's the most incredibly gifted guy with wood that I had ever seen. Like my sophomore year, he just takes this chunk. It was a big square of wood. And the next thing you know, it's round. And right. It's like 1.5 inches thick. And then for like 1.5 weeks, he's just doodling and drawing. And the next thing you know, he's got this set of chisels out and he hand chisels this thing and turns it into this. It was a serving platter for at Christmas time. Oh. And it had all the, like the pine pieces. It looked like, you know, pine boughs. And I mean, he had all the pine needles chiseled into it and the acorns and stuff. And it was just like, holy shit. And you know, he had this, it was a mini Conestoga wagon. I don't know, maybe like 18 inches or so long, maybe 1 foot high. Beautiful little thing. Well, my neighbor, who is one of my closest friends, and that's a story for another time of just how it's weird. Like, and I said this to you, you know, yesterday, maybe even, but you know, it's like the powers that be, they move the pieces on the chessboard, and then they sit back and they watch how we react.
Yes, I agree with this.
It's not like there's some force governing us, but oh, they certainly put things into play, and then they want to see how we react.
Yeah.
I would have to say 90% of the time they're up there just like, oh Jesus, you know, because we just screw up. I mean, I look at society and I'm just like, to me, it's what I know how it should be. It seems to it like to me, it's so simple, mm-hmm. but I'm just like, how in the hell can 99% of the world not see this, you know? I'm just like, oh my God. I'm like where you look back at the 40s, the 50s, the 60s. I'm like the compassion and openness that like how people were, we were an incredibly wealthy world. Well, like we were the number one world power, and things worked. And I'm like, it's like we've lost ourselves.
Yes, we have.
I think part, you know, you look at the breakdown and my mom, she was like, are you kidding me? She was like, when I was a kid, she's like, when you came home, you ate dinner at the table with the rest of your family every daggone night. And yeah. That's the way it was.
Yes. I grew up that way too.
You know, and I kind of did, but it was just my mom and I. And so it was a little more lax here, but, you know, but then all of a sudden she said once a week or so, she was like, it was a treat. She was like, she said, your grandma, we would make TV dinners and we would all sit with the TV tray, which most people probably don't. There's a lot of people that don't even know what they are. I'm not talking about like the nice wooden ones they have now. I mean,
yeah, the metal ones.
Oh my God.
We had the metal ones and there was this, the scenery on it that was like, it was trees.
With the designs and the stuff that were on.
Yeah.
You know, and she was like, and we would sit in our family room and watch like one of our favorite shows, but they did that together too. Like she was like, that was, you know, on every Tuesday night, we would all sit in the room to the family room and we would watch, you know, whatever. And I'm like, and then all of a sudden it's like, that didn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
You know, people started going their own way. And part of it is just saying, well, next thing you know, well, yeah, because now all of a sudden, you know, the cost of living is so great and our salaries haven't changed that now mom has to work too.
Yeah.
You know, so then that changed everything. And, you know, I think that is where part of the breakdown is. And it's just like, you know,
the focus on family and doing things in a family unit is way less and way less important in 2025 than I think it's ever been. And
well, there's
technology technology creeping in with all that just really,
that's the worst thing. And I mean, this is a conversation for another day, but I'm like, oh my God, you know, like most people now, I mean, technology is great, but I'm like, oh, we're so handicapped. Yes. I mean, if somebody flipped the switch tomorrow and the lights got turned out. Oh, I know myself personally. I know a shitload of people. They're going to be freaking out within the first 4 hours.
Yes.
Within a day. Holy crap. They're going to be saying that they're starving because they don't eat. Like, I'm like, dude, really? I'm like, it is, it's a scary thought, but I mean, it's just, you know, it's, I mean, it's weird. It's like people just seem so they're so guarded now. You know, like my father had this perfect like way. And he was like, when I grew up, he was like if the neighbor's house burnt down, he was like, your nan and pap, he goes, everybody in that neighborhood chipped in to help them. Whether, you know, he was like one house was had the kids sleep in there, you know, the other, so the next neighbor had the parents were staying there. He goes, dude. And he was like, you helped them rebuild because that's what a community did. He goes, now he was like, the neighbor's house is burning down. And the guy's like, honey, bring me another Jack and Coke. Check this out. Freaking right. Neighbor's house is burning down.
Yeah.
And they like, want to watch it. Yeah. I mean, where I grew up, And I don't know about you, but I mean, just here, I mean, like, I can remember growing up that, like, all of a sudden it was like Saturday night. My mom would be like, well, we're going over to the neighbors tonight.
You play cards.
Or they're having a cookout.
Yeah.
And there was five, six, seven of all the neighbors. And the cool thing was, is, you know, I mean, most of the time, like, you know, there was other kids I knew I was going to see there.
Yeah.
But that's what you did. Like, yeah. I mean, for real, like when a new neighbor moved in, like my dad would walk across the street, introduce himself and say, hey, you know, if you need any, holy shit. If you did that, like if a neighbor moved in now and I go walking across the street and I'd introduce myself, they'd think I was freaking stone cold certifiable crazy.
Yeah. That or some places they pull a gun on you. So I'm not sure, you know, the fear is real. The fear of people. It's sad. It's sad that we are as afraid of each other as we are. And we don't want to deal with anybody that is different than us. And it's strange. It's strange that we are so guarded the way we are. That's why I limit myself digitally with people, because one, you just never know. Two, I try to limit time off my phones, off my computers. I sit in front of a computer all day long at my other job. So when I can have time and put that down, I do a lot. I crochet a lot because if I'm crocheting, like I can see the time that I'm spending in the things that I'm making. And that helps.
It's a lot easier when whatever it is that you do, you see the fruits of it.
Correct.
You know, that it produces something.
Yes.
You know, it's like I would tell any of you, if you're doing something and it's not producing jack shit, you may want to rethink things.
Yes,
because
I agree.
If you're doing, it doesn't matter what it is, if you're involving effort into it, it should be for a reason. You know,
right.
Should be some reward at the end. I mean, you know, but I'm just like, it's,
right.
I mean, and I see the amount of time that's like people waste on like the most stupidest shit that I can imagine. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, and it's just, I think people, it's like they've lost what that moral, I don't know. It's like, the moral sense that I grew up with. I mean, like when I was a kid, I mean, I'm not shitting you. Like if I walked into McDonald's with my grandmother and I didn't hold the door for the guy that was coming in behind me, oh shit. Mm-hmm. It was going to turn out to be an ugly lunch at McDonald's because I would have probably been marched. I probably would have been marched over to his table and made to apologize. You know, or I've also seen the therapy of, well, the next thing you know, you're being made to stand there and hold the door open for the next five people to come up. I still, like, to this day, like, I do that. Like, somebody's coming, I'll stand there. I don't care if I've got to wait 30 seconds. I'm holding the door for you if I see you coming that, and I know that's, I'm holding the door for you. And it don't matter if you're a man, woman, child, or whatever. That's just how I was raised.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
But I mean, shit, that's not the case now. I mean, one of my closest brothers, I mean, great guy. We went to high school, junior high together. Man, we got in some serious, serious trouble together. But I mean, really good guy. And I mean, it's funny, you know, like his wife and I mean, his wife's one of my best friends. And so she comes up with all these like great little pseudonyms, like for her husband's different attitudes. And like, I'd walk in and she'd be like, she was like tie wearing Hans, like a suit and tie. She was like, tie wearing Hans is home right now. And I'm like, oh shit. Like, he's on the phone, like talking to somebody. And like, I'm like, are you kidding me? And then like, he hangs up the phone and walks around the corner. He's like, dude, what's up, bro? And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, why don't you just be that guy on the phone? Because I mean, you can still be the responsible, because he was a vice president in one of the divisions of a bank here. I'm like, you can still be that guy.
Yeah.
But I'm like, dude, you should be this guy doing that, because I'm like, oh, dude, I'd be more than willing to let you manage, you know, put my money in your bank.
Right.
I'm like, for real, dude. And I mean, that's what I told my buddy. He was like, you still haven't grown up. I said, hell no. Absolutely. Or I said, I have. I mean, I said, I understand what needs to be done and you know, try to be as mature as and responsible to take care of my bills and everything else. And I saved some money. And I'm like, I'm still, but there, I said, where does that say I still can't be the crazy son of a gun that I am? You know, and I mean, most of my friends are that way. You know, but some of them, like I said, you know, they all come over and they're sitting there and like, you know, we'll like, dude, we should go do this. And they're like, oh my God, we can't. I'm like, what do you mean? We can't do this. I mean,
we can do it.
I'm like, dude, I'm like, are you kidding me? You used to be the ringleader when we were in school. And now they're like, oh my God, we can't do that. What if we got in trouble? Uh-huh. You know, I'm like,
God. Yep. I totally understand.
This more than enough times. Dude, are you kidding me? Caught, my wife will kill me.
I know, it's weird, isn't it? I think it's weird.
a lot of the people I know, I'm like, dude, I know your wife too. I'm like, are you kidding me? She used to be just as bad as you were in high school. You know, I was like, she was the female ringleader of all the delinquents. And I'm like, oh my God, what happened to you two? Like, you like so much fun. And I'm like, now you're square.
Yeah.
You know? I'm like, you're a nerd now. I'm like, really? They're like, shut up. I'm like, it is. I'm like, oh my God.
So what do you do what do you do for a career, Maddie? How do you pay your bills?
Okay. Yeah. Cause it's funny. This is what I tell people. I'm like, it's what I do for a living. What I do for a wage is basically, I'm a superintendent for a construction company.
Oh, a superintendent. What does that mean?
So I basically am in charge of running jobs for our company. And I've been doing this a really long time. And the guy that I work for, great guy. You know, and so we went to elementary school together. I mean, I've known the guy, and like, I forget, a couple of weeks ago, my neighbor's like, dude, you and David have known each other like 44 years. And I'm like, wow. Oh my God. I'm like,
wow.
I'm like, man, we did. We met in first grade. But when I was at my lowest, coming out of basically, I had come home from rehab the first time and things just were bad.
Yeah.
You know, there very rarely does your first shot in a rehab snap it into reality of like, hey, you're, and basically it's like my buddy, this is what he was like, dude, he's like, you just decide to stick your head back up your own ass. and you know, he looked at me, he was like, dude, really nasty place. He was like, you'd think after a while you would certainly want your head stuck somewhere else. But he was like, nope. And he was like, you're like an ostrich. He was like, but you just decide to stick your head in your ass. And I mean, he'd say that to me all the time. Like, you know, and he'd stop up and he'd be like, Jeff, you up your ass like you? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, how was it? And I'm just like, it's like, shut up. You know, and but anyways, you know, I was a mess. And so, his father had been giving me some counseling. He was basically like a Christian counselor. And so he basically said to, you know, has told his son, hey, you know, and so he was just a small company and he got this huge painting job and basically he offered me to come to work for him. And
oh, nice.
I mean, it's crazy. I said to him the other day, I'm like, you realize I started with you for like $9 an hour. you know, and I was just like, oh my God, you know, we look back on it and but it's what I thrive on. Is like I like to work with my hands. I really need to see the fruits of my labor. You know, that's, and I mean, to each their own. I mean, the world's not going to go around. I mean, you got to have guys that are happy sitting behind a computer desk, and there's not a damn thing wrong with that.
Right.
You know, for anybody, if that's what you, you know, I would certainly say this is a serious problem. Most people in this world are not happy at their jobs, which that pretty much you're screwed at that point if you don't figure out how to deal with that issue.
Yes,
you know,
I agree.
You know, yep. you really, I don't care if you don't see it, you need to find something that truly makes you happy, because when you're happy and you're passionate about something, I mean, you know this, you sense energy probably more than I do. Yeah. I mean, when you know, you do something that makes you happy, I mean, the aura about a person, energy, I mean, everything changes. And that energy affects everything else in your life.
Right. And it affects the people around you.
Oh, my God, yes. I mean, people don't understand. Like, I could walk in a room and I could totally influence how somebody feels, and I don't even have to open my mouth. It can just be by my body language and just
the energy. Yep. The energy you emanate. Yep.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean,
you just explained what my profile name is. Happy KB. Happy is an affirmation. That's how I always want to be. And that's how I always like to feel. And I normally am happy. I'm not very unhappy very often. And it's partly because of that exact thing. That's the energy I want to emit from myself. And I want that to be infectious for anybody else that comes around me, because I don't ever want to be the negative. I don't ever want to put out that negative, because that doesn't make me feel good. Being happy, being nice, being polite, being considerate, those give me so much energy and positive energy. Like, I want that to be infectious to everybody else. And they take that and they spread that out. So yeah, absolutely. I totally understand that.
If people were just compassionate and just happy and open with you, I mean, oh my God. I mean, people don't understand. I mean, we would be like, we're forced to be reckoned with. I mean,
yes.
Certainly, you know, I don't think we wouldn't be in this position as a society. You know, I mean, like you look at our government, I'm like, dude, they're supposed to work for us. You know, there was a point where, you know, we were like, no, this ain't happening. It didn't happen.
Right.
I'm like, this is not how this is all supposed to work. You know, I mean, like before taxes, I mean, so, you know, before our almighty income tax, which is that's a tough topic for another thing. I mean, honestly, if you crunch the numbers, and I crunch numbers on things because it's math doesn't lie. I mean,
right.
It's as simple as this. You can look at me and tell me 900 different ways. I'm like, doesn't matter, bro. Right here on the paper that you're full of shit. Yes. You know, it just don't add up. But, you know, before income taxes, things were paid. They're like, well, you have to have that to you know, to pay for roads. I'm like, to do this, to do that. I'm like, well, in the day, they used to sell bonds. If the government wanted to do something, they sold bonds. And if we, the people, were into what they wanted to do, we would buy those bonds.
Right.
But if we're like, no, that's crazy. We just didn't buy the bonds. Well, they didn't get to do what they wanted to do.
Right. Yes.
So, you know, so here comes our income tax and now they just do whatever they want to do. But I'm like, no, they're supposed to work for us and say, hey, what do you guys want?
Supposed to, but down the line somewhere, those people in charge kind of started twisting how some things were supposed to be ran, and henceforth.
I mean, it's going to happen. I mean, and right. I mean,
we don't know the best way to handle things at times, and so
as a people don't understand it. So you have a young politician that's, you know, his voice, it carries some weight in decisions that are made, you know, and. We don't know, you know, so it's like, dude, I've never been in that position. So, but I mean, it's as simple as, I mean, this happens. I mean, all of a sudden there's a, say, some huge industry leader that wants something to happen. And well, all of a sudden, you know, your kid's tuition is getting paid, or, you know, to go to a, I mean, it's hard because, I mean, you know, I mean, the weight that they carry, I mean, it's no, there's no lie in this. I mean, that's how they're all as wealthy as they are. I mean, they make decisions on the floor that affect industry. And they know that, okay, the decision, this bill that's going to get passed is going to cause this industry to basically just have the bottom drop out of it. Well, okay, well, now it doesn't take a brainiac to figure out where you're going to invest your money or do whatever.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, anywhere else in the world that's called insider trading, I'm like, you crucified Martha Stewart for it, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah, she served time for that.
Oh no! And I'm like, and what she did was peanuts.
Right.
I mean, if you look, I'm not going to name her, but one of the female, one of our female Congress people.
Yes.
I mean, so she's worth like $129 million. Well, crunch the numbers on that. At her salary, that means she, if she would have to save her salary to do that, she'd have to been in office 3,049 years.
I mean, she kind of looks and like she's been there that long, but it's fine.
I'm like, bro, and you're going to look me in, and this is what I said to you before. I'm like, I'm not a conspiracy nut. What I am is when you look me in the face and tell me that, I mean, there's 100 things in front of me that I'm like, yeah, this is some screwed up shit. And they're all like, well, it seems that way, but they're all just coincidences. Are you serious? I'm like, do I have jackass written on my forehead?
Yes, that's what they want us to know, that we do have that written on our faces.
But I'll be like somewhere and I look at the guy next to me and I'm like, holy shit, you do have jackass written on your forehead. I'm like, you're buying this? I'm like, oh my God.
So let me ask, since we've gotten into this subject, so what do you think about this tariff situation? How do you feel about the tariffs?
I, you want my honest opinion?
I want your honest opinion.
You know what? Simple as this. You know, okay. You want to sell your product in this country, and it's causing people in this country not to have jobs. And, you know, hurt the business that they're in. It takes, you know, basically takes jobs away from America. Yeah, guess what? Well, you're going to pay heavily to do so. You know, I mean, the whole free trade agreement, I mean, that was like the beginning of the end. You know, I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you know, I mean, like people, like the income tax, everything. I'm like, do you not see this? I mean, basically, right? I mean, the income tax that we pay now, I mean, it's as simple as this. We are paying the interest on money that people spent doing things that they never asked us if it was okay for.
Correct.
We're now paying I'm like, wait, what? I mean, that's like, it's as simple as that would be like all of a sudden my neighbor walking over and be like, yo, man, I bought a new car today. Guess what? You're picking up the tab.
Yep.
I mean, it's no different. I'm like, I'm not going to say, I mean, in this, I mean, one thing I've learned is if you want to maintain a close relationship with people, unless you're really close, you probably really shouldn't talk theology and you probably shouldn't talk politics.
Politics, that's right.
I mean, I've been in rooms where I've seen two best friends. All of a sudden, they're beating the shit out of each other on did they wear a red sweater or a blue sweater when they vote. You know, I mean, I've seen that crap sever friendships.
Yeah,
I mean, I've seen
it's scary.
People's personal beliefs shatter freaking relationships. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? You know, I mean, let's, so, and it's, It's as simple as this. I'm just going to put this out there. So, you know, I have a friend. He's a guy. I'm not, no name. I mean, but he's gay. So what?
Yeah.
You know, but there's still, unfortunately, there is. I mean, there's a prejudice and a stereotype about homosexuals. I mean, just about everything. There's a stereotype about Blacks and Hispanics. But there's same stereotype about us, Caucasian and white people. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, okay, you want to talk about a waste of time. And you know, like, yes. I told, and like, I mean, like, I know guy, and they're like, really? Like, you would count on him? They're like, he's gay. I'm like, yeah, who gives a shit? I'm like, cause guess, I'm like, dude, it's simple as this. I'm like, 4 o'clock in the morning, I need it. I call. I'm like, dude, he's walking out the door, pulling his underwear on to get to his car to get here. And I'm like, you, sir. And I'm telling the other guy, I'm like, you certainly, you wouldn't even be answering your damn phone. Yeah. You know, I'm like, that's, I don't care how he voted. What I count on, what I care about is if I need him as a friend and I call him and say, bro, I need you, dude, he's there. I don't give a crap about it. That's what's important.
Yes, because he's a human being.
Well, and I mean,
when we dehumanize people because of the things that they are into, their lifestyles, the color of their skin, the way that they worship, the way that they politically align, when we dehumanize people for those things, yeah, we have a problem, and it happens. It happens every day.
Well, I mean, I'm like, dude, I mean, people have lost the idea of, I mean, what a relationship is. I mean, like, example, like when I was growing up, I mean, like, divorce was a heavy duty freaking thing. Like, yes. You know, now, I mean, people just get married and they're, I mean, literally, you know, I've heard this, like, yeah, I'm like, you sure about this? And like, oh, if it don't work out, you would just,
I'll just get divorced. Yeah.
I'm like, bro, then you know what? I'm like, that's what boyfriend girlfriends do. Yeah. You know, I'm like, that's how you find the person you're supposed to marry so that you get married. I'm like, hello? Like, do you know them vowels? I mean, they're supposed to mean something, thick and thin, you know, for better or for worse. I'm like, hello?
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, people just have lost their core values.
Right. We don't value marriage. We don't, what the sanctity of marriage is and the importance of it and how hard it is to be married. I don't know. I've never been married, but I come from a mom and dad that are still married and have had, you know, they've really had to work at it. And like, I've had really good, I have a good role models in my life that my brother and his wife are still married. And, you know, like the things that they had to go through, they just didn't go, oh, well, I'm done with you. I'm just going to go divorce you. It's harder than that. It's, I don't know. I never got that person to show up in my life that I wanted to commit and make it and like work on a marriage with, because I didn't want to jump into anything.
And guess what? There's nothing wrong with any of those things. Yep. I mean, I know I have personal friends. They've been together 20, 25, 30 years. They didn't get married. They have families, great kids. They're just like, they're just like, they're like, dude, it's simple as this. You know, there was one person for me and I found her. And like, I don't need some piece of freaking paper to.
Well,
you know,
right. In this day and age, it's all a piece of paper for governmental purposes. So we can file taxes, I mean, and it can all be go. And that's where we've lost what being married to somebody actually is, because we turned it into this other thing. This thing so we can have insurance, this thing so we can file taxes, this thing that so we can get benefits from our spouse. And we don't value the meeting somebody, being with somebody, staying with somebody, and actually building a life with somebody, because now everything under the sun.
So that's where I was going. And I enjoy talking with people, you know, like I'll forget where I was, but you know, we're talking about that. And so, you know, this sense of entitlement. One of my close friends, you know, he said to me, he's like, Manny, I just don't know where the hell I went wrong. And I'm like, he's like, and he was talking about his son. I'm like, brother, you didn't go wrong. I'm like, in my opinion, and I said, this is just not because I'm your friend. I'm like, you're an awesome person. I mean, I'm like, dude, you've got great morals. I mean, I've seen you instill this into your kid. I'm like, dude, it's the 8 hours a day that they're in school that you aren't there in their life. Yeah. It's the other families that they hang out with, you know, after school. I'm like, dude. And he was like, so literally he's telling him, he's like, dude, he was like, my kid literally tells me the other week, he's like, it started out like he got in trouble in school. And he was just literally like, could not fathom why he was being punished. And he was, he did it with me, but yet his parent and my buddy's like, well, then pack your freaking bags and go move in with them. Cause he's like, that's not the way it happened. So, you know, he's like, it doesn't happen that way here. And then he's like, oh, it gets better. He's like, he tells us now that basically he should get whatever he wants. And how did you come up with that, young Einstein? And he's like, well, it's as simple as this. He goes, I've got to live in this world and it's by no choice of my own. He was like, you and mom didn't take into consideration my feelings or how I was, you know. And literally my buddy looked at me and he goes, dude, I tell you, he's like, listen, bro. He's like, he's like, when we were busy making you, he's like, we weren't really thinking about a bunch of shit. You know, he was like, we were both thinking, and I'm like, oh, touche, dude, you gave it to him good. He goes, yeah. He's like, he was like, I was just thinking about banging your mom. Trust me, wasn't worrying about you. He's like, she got pregnant. But, you know, he was like, I said, how did you react to that? He goes, I wanted to take him out in the yard and choke him till his eyes started to bulge. And he goes, and then let him breathe and be like, are you okay? And he's like, kiss him on the forehead, tell him I love him, and then choke him some more. And I'm like, damn, bro. And he's like, but here's the clincher. He goes, no. He was like, his mother, he was like, dude, my buddy's wife, he was like, my wife wanted to kill him. He was like, you know, he was like, she was so pissed off. And I'm like, that's the world we live in. No, man, it's as simple as this. You're going to get what you earn and what you work for.
Yeah.
You know, and that's part of this. I mean, and part of it, I think, you know, the government wants people like in the inner city. So I don't care if you're Black, Hispanic, white, whatever. None of that makes any. They want you on government programs. I mean, they want you relying on them because, you know, with that, if all of a sudden public opinion changes and people start realizing that we're getting screwed and they want to start getting a little uppity, they're like, well, guess what? No more, you know, no more food stamps. No more, your bills, your gas and your utilities are paid. None of that. It keeps the people real calm.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I look at it and this is just a proven fact. Look at the numbers. I mean, I don't care what race you are. If you're a really young girl and you see all your sisters and all your cousins and your aunts and your all of them just getting pregnant all the time and having basically children out of wedlock, that if you stay single as a woman, the government will basically step in and pay all your bills, give you food stamps for your kids, and you don't have to do a damn thing. You can sit around all day long. And
yeah,
chances are
it's true.
She's gonna do the same thing. Because it's just the environment they're in. Same difference. I mean, you're a young guy and you see all the older males, you know, out on the corner slinging dope.
Yep.
And they're making $3,000-$4,000 a day. And dude, they're like, what? You want me to work for 40 hours a week and pay me $250 or $300? Or they're going to do the same damn thing.
Yeah.
And nothing is done to try to change the cycle in any of that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there isn't.
I truly believe in my heart that all the racial tension that has been felt through this country, I mean, for decades, oh, there's somebody behind the scenes there, you know, I look at it now and I'm just like, bro, do you not see this? This is, it's like, there's somebody constantly fueling the fire.
Yes.
And I'm like, it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, attention against transgender people or gay or people of a different race or skin. I'm like, bro, this is a lot of hate. And it's like, it seems to me like somebody's keeping us so busy and so occupied with all this stuff that we don't see. It's like the Wizard of Oz. Don't look at the guy. Don't look at the man behind the curtain.
Behind the curtain. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
That's, I'm like, bro, here's the sad thing. By the time we realize it, that it's going to be too late. You know, and I'm like, dude, people, we need to start waking up now.
Here's my question. Do you feel that there are more people becoming awake than where they were before? Do you get that sensation? Do you feel that yet?
Oh, yeah. And you and I talked about this. So, yeah. I mean, if you want, I do. And you know, I have views on that. And I mean, if you had said to me that, you know, conversation doesn't usually go this direction, just, which is weird, but that's just how conversations are. But absolutely. There's something that's going on. I mean, and I find it fascinating, you know, because, you know, it's becoming more acceptable. Let's say, they're realizing now that, oh, psilocybin therapy is one of the only thing that works for these horribly battered people that come back from like Iraq and Afghanistan that have PTSD so bad, they can't even leave their house to go get groceries.
Yes.
You know, they hear a kid pop a bubble wrap and they about shit their pants because it's that knee jerk reaction. I'm like, bro, and nothing that big pharmacy is making for them is doing a fucking thing.
Yeah. Well, just how hard we've had to fight to get MDMA certified so they can start using that in the PTSD, the PTSD for our vets alone. Like, we've had to fight tooth and nail just to get this substance that we in the psychedelic world know can help. We in the psychedelic know that these substances and these medicines do help.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I look at things in such a simple way. I'm like, okay, so you have, let's say you have MDMA. It's a Schedule I narcotic. So that means that it has absolutely no redeeming qualities of that are produced by it whatsoever. So that also means that it's illegal to use it to do research with or anything. And I'm like, bro, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. Okay, so you got 100,000 freaking people with PTSD that's war generated. And nothing you assholes are doing is working. But yet you give all these guys a good dose of freaking Molly, basically, under controlled environment. Mm-hmm. And dude, they can go back to work. They're able to go to the store. They're able to be a father or a mother.
Exactly.
And yet you're going to tell me there's no redeeming qualities to it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess my idea and of that definition and yours are two totally different things.
Yes.
I mean, I'm a big cannabis advocate. I mean, you look at that. Okay. So it's the only drug that basically we have receptors in our brain that are specifically geared to respond with cannabinoids. I mean, our body produces our own endocannabinoids. I mean, that's what a runner's high is.
Yep.
I'm like, here's the thing. I'm like, it syncs with your brain. All your other drugs that are out there, like your crazy ones, they don't do that. Heroin, cocaine, meth, they basically rewrite your brain's programming. That, you know, to a point where it can be hard for like, and I've been an opiate addict. I mean, your brain gets to a point where that's how it is, that's what it associates normal is. So when you don't have that substance there, dude, well, that ain't cool. You know, it's basically rewriting your programming. I'm like, but you know, cannabis doesn't do that. And I'm like, really? I mean, it's, and I like, my boss was like, so his son his oldest son, he was like, he's like, dude, you got to talk to him about stopping smoking weed. I'm like, excuse me? Because he totally knows. I mean, he knows I smoke weed. You know, and I'm like, you're asking me? And he's like, he was like, he respects you. I'm like, dude, I do bong hits when I go home. And he's like, I'm like, bro, you got to learn. He's not going to do anything. You can't force anything on him. Yeah. And here's the deal. I said, in the harder you try, let me tell you what, probably the more pot he's going to smoke.
Yeah.
Because that's the reaction. I'm like, bro. And of course, he was like, I know, but he was like, for God's sakes, it's the gateway drug. And I'm like, oh my God, you're like some 1950s Reefer's Madness movie. I'm like, are you serious? I'm like, bro, that is such a lie. I tell him, myself and like numerous friends I have that I grew up with in like DeGrasse, I'm like, every one of us, if you ask them the same question, they would rather see their kids smoke weed than like be out drinking.
Yeah.
And they're like, 100%. I said to him, I'm like, bro, I hate to tell you this. I said, every horribly bad decision I have ever made, I can almost guarantee you there was alcohol at the center of that son of a bitch. Mm-hmm. Oh, there was, dude. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, but the problem with it is it's socially acceptable.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's like my dad said, I mean, you could be the CEO of a $1 billion company and you go out and get shit faced every day at lunch and go back to your office. As long as that company's still making billions of dollars, just they don't give a shit.
They don't care. Yep. That's right.
And, you know, it's just how it is. You know, everywhere you go, I mean, it's just, you know, and that's like, for me, that was part of what I've seen that guy becoming awake. And I'm like, looking at things and I'm like, well, you know, I'm like, where does it say that I'm not going to say that. And I'm like, you know, this is so much of this is ingrained into our culture. I'm like, yeah. I still have friends that literally live this lifestyle. They, you know, all week long, they work to get to Friday and then they go out with their wife or husband to the bar, get completely fucking shit faced.
Yeah.
And then come home and I'm like, and then you lay there all day Saturday, like just moaning and whining like we did when we were in our 20s.
Yes, but it's twice as hard and twice as
I'm like,
rough.
Really, dude? But then it's also, you know, well, this is how it is. Well, you know, our society, dude, hey, man, I get these calls still. Dude, it was, you know, this and that. It was an incredible day. Come on, we're going out drinking tonight. I'm like, okay, well, where does it say that because it was an incredible day that you've got to go drinking?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I'm at a point like, and so people are like, you can't drink. You're an alcoholic. I'm like, no, I'm like, I finally figured this shit out. I'm like, dude, I'm like, I have a drink when I want to have a drink. And I said, it's not that often anymore. You know, Friday, Saturday nights, you know, I might have a few and I especially enjoy having a few drinks. Like when I'm in my kitchen and I cook, sure. I love to cook.
Yes, especially I know. Like, you know, I've seen something you've cooked and it looked delicious. So yes, I'm aware you like to cook.
Like, especially like if I'm making something that has wine in it, like I'll buy a bottle and I'm like, so, you know, it gets one glass or a cup of wine in it. Well, yeah, guess what? It's not going to waste. I'm going to drink the rest of that bottle of, you know, Chardonnay or whatever. But you know what? There's nothing wrong with that because, you know, I tell anybody, I'm like, dude, you can do whatever the hell you want. I'm like, dude, I don't care. Yeah. You smoke crack all night long. As long as you take care of your business first, though.
Yeah.
All your bills are met. All your responsibilities are taken care of. If that's all done and you can do this and still repeatedly take care of your responsibilities,
mm-hmm.
well, then that's on you. You know, but the minute it's anything you do, the minute it starts making your responsibilities get crazy, you should really probably take a good look at it.
Yeah. I agree.
And I'm like, so now it's like, I've had many a bad day and I didn't have a beer. I've had bad days where I did have a beer. You know, I've had good days where I didn't just decide to drink. And then there's been days where it's just because didn't have any bearing on whether it was a good or bad day. I just wanted to have a beer. And, you know, I'm just like, it's just, I lost sight of things, you know. It's fine to relax, or, I mean, you know, I mean, I find, oh man, I mean, you know, I found great healing and just, you know, I mean, simple as this, like, you know, every once in a while, just basically dropping off the grid for a Friday night and dropping two hits of freaking acid and, man, just go on a soul searching, you know, I'm like, oh my God. I mean, 10 hours of the most incredible freaking soul searching that you've ever done. Like, I've sat in a room with no music or anything, just in my own thoughts.
Yes. And,
like, looking at shit. And it's like, you can just, it's like you can just kind of sit these things down in front of you and like look at the whole big picture. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh shit. Yep. I don't like that. I don't like this.
Yep.
You know, it's, I can tell you, I mean, I become way recentered again. I feel just more balanced.
Sure.
And I look at that and I'm like, you know, it's like sometimes my buddy said this, he goes, you ever wonder why he was like, technically, he was like the couple of the psychedelics that basically open your third eye. He's like, you ever wonder why they're the ones that carry the harshest penalties out of all the drugs and the longest prison sentences? And
yeah,
he was like, kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it? And I kind of wonder, like, is there the powers that be that are out there? No, because I mean, you and I've talked about this. Like, it's weird. Like, mushrooms are one thing. So is acid. But like DMT is a whole different creature.
Yes.
It's alive. It senses. Like, I mean, it's no lie. I mean, I make my own carts. You know.
Yeah.
And, you know, not
thus,
to shoot my
and
own.
Thus, but not and thus you should, if you are partaking, because, well, it's a better experience if you've done the whole process instead of getting it from somebody you don't know who made that, well, because then therefore you don't know.
There's part of it is the self-gratification, though, is it's something that you created.
Exactly.
That's part of it. I mean, same thing with mushrooms. I mean, when you grow your own, I mean, you're going on a journey with something like it. You're being able to, you have the keys to unlock a dimensional wall, and it's because you're the one that created it.
You created the doorway. You took enough time to put that effort in it, and you created that out of, and the energy that's put into it, and the whole mental process. One of my favorite things is talk to cultivators and like the things that they become so passionate about the mushroom and growing the mushrooms. And they actually, a lot of them talk about the connection, you know, the mushrooms finding them and connecting with them. DMT is the same way. I've found that people who have gravitated to DMT that are looking to learn how to extract it themselves become very passionate about it, because it's the beginning, like the journey itself, not even the actual experience of smoking the DMT and having the blasting session, just that taking a plant, taking its bark, breaking it down, the whole alchemical process of it, and then the understanding of the energy process that we as humans put into everything that we do. And then we have this created product, this substance that we went and did this whole alchemical process to change a plant into a stone or a molecule, a crystal molecule. That in itself is magic. That's crazy. Like, I remember the first time, you know, I had crappy bark, but I was going to do it, and I did it, and it took me forever. And when I had the product, it was so amazing, because it was like, I did this myself, and I knew, you know, this molecule is going to take me to places that are going to be beyond my whole thought process. Yeah. And it's exciting. You tell
me. For me growing up, like, I mean, when I was in my teens and even in my 20s and stuff, like, I mean, like, there was always mushrooms, always acid. Every once in a while, if you're really lucky, you found like real true some mescaline.
Mescaline, yeah.
DMT, like, you would hear the whispers of it.
Yeah, it was never prevalent.
No, it was like the pink unicorn that farted rainbows. I mean, it's so mythical, but you ain't ever, it's just like you would hear stories of it. Or, you know, I mean, for God's sakes, I can remember, do you remember High Times magazine?
Yes.
And, you know, there would be little articles in there about it, and you're just like, oh my God, what is this? And, you know, and it's like I said, it's weird. Like, you know, not to toot my own horn, but my carts are pretty thumping. And so, you know, but I wanted them that way. But it's like, I've come home and, you know, like where, and I didn't realize it at the time, but I look back on it now and I'm like, oh my God, like I didn't see it. Like, I've come home and like, I've done 2, 3, 4 hits and like, you would think, but it's, nothing really happens that's astounding. And then there's been times I come home and like, I would just do one. And all of a sudden, like the whole freaking, my whole dining room, like turns into this multicolored freaking rainbow box.
Yep.
And like, oh, I'm watching shit pulsing through, like, especially my cat. I mean, I looked at my cat the one time, he's my mom's cat. And like, there was like kaleidoscopic swirls shooting through his fur. And when he looked up at me, his eyes were changing color. And when I mean color, they were like pink and blue. And I was like, holy shit. But yes. I'm like, okay, so, but I'm like, why does that not happen when I've done 3 or 4 blinkers? And, but now I just do one. And I look back, it was the emotional state that I was in before. Ooh, yes. I did it.
Absolutely.
And I've said this to you, fear and anger seem to be somehow a big no-no in the world of DMT.
Correct.
Like, I mean, I've talked to many people when they are in their, I mean, full breakthrough, and they're like, the minute that they start, they're like, dude, they got scared, and they were like, it was ride over.
Mm, yep.
You know, it's like, okay, do not pass go, and boom, yeah, we're like, that's it. It's like, and you and I talked about this, and this is what I'm like, bro, you know, all of us, I think, you know, in a sense, we've all just only been scratching the surface. Like, none of us have really truly broken through, any of us, because, in my impression that all the entities that I'd ever encountered are, I get the sense, because I'm very empathic and they're testing us. It's a test. It's like, you know, and I mean, like I've said this to you before, like I've read so many things on the basic three entities, you know, the little self-like ones, your geomechanical ones, and then the ones that are alien-like, and they always impart some sort of life-changing wisdom. I'm like, okay, I haven't really seen any of them three yet. But I've talked to people, I mean, there's just a plethora of them. And but they all get the same sense. They're like, it is. It's like you're being tested. It's like they're keepers of the gate. And I'm like, dude, that's not breaking through. The breakthrough is when we finally get left to go through that gate and you get to see what's on the other side. You know, I'm like, it's like, you know, I get that impression. I mean, I feel like they are definitely guardians. I mean, and there was people on the world that they were like, dude, my encounters here recently, they've been like negative. And I responded to them, was like, dude, they'll answer you. Did you think about just asking them? Well, you know, hey, why are you pissed? I'm like, they'll answer you, bro, in one way or another. And I'm like, you know, like, I look at it this way. I'm like, I think we as a whole, I'm like, when you look at shamans and stuff and you look at Native American culture and stuff, before they go on a massive peyote journey or ayahuasca, any of that, dude, mm-hmm. they spent like a couple days like purifying and cleansing themselves. Like,
yes. You know,
let me tell you, I mean, hape, oh yeah, it'll cleanse you. I mean, you'll you'll have projectile vomiting and diarrhea, and you have snot running your nose.
The
and
purge like, is real, yes.
And not just that, they fast.
Yeah.
They'll fast. I said, they'll sit for hours and meditate. I'm like, bro, you got to look at what's going on here. We're missing the big picture here, bro. This is something you need to truly prepare for.
Yes.
I'm like, you know, and I'm like, I think some of the, like these, I'm like, they've been on the other side of the gate. Cause here's the deal. I'm like, nobody that I've talked to is like, is getting like some crazy mind altering